In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valenti and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Welcome to the Hotel Hell. Check-in time is now. Check-out time is never.
It's Mike Shope.
Does my room have cable?
No. And the sheets are made of fire.
Can I change rooms?
Sorry, we're all booked up. Hell convention in town.
And the Bulldog.
Can I have a late checkout?
I'll have to talk to the manager.
You're not the manager, even in your own fantasy?
I'm the owner. The co-owner. With Satan.
It's Mike Shope.
Okay. Just so I understand it, in your wildest fantasy, you are in hell. And you are co-running a bed and breakfast with the devil.
And the Bulldog.
Yeah, but I haven't told you my salary yet.
Go.
$80,000 a year.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Welcome back. I have been looking forward to this moment for a long time. Welcoming Dave Pasch to the show. I worked with Dave for one season in Syracuse. I'm very proud of that. Today, having this opportunity has me nostalgic for that. Anybody listening to the SU radio broadcast for the Orange Men, then Orange Men's riveting 49-21 season-ending win over Rutgers had to be asking the question, where is Dave? As I filled in, it was Hawaii or Alaska. I don't remember which. One of these cool places. But it was a great thrill for me to fill in for you that day at the Carrier Dome. No place I'd rather be. It's a long time ago now, Dave. How's life?
Hey, Mike, how you doing? That was Alaska, I believe. Pretty sure that was the old Great Alaska Shootout.
Yes, either that or the Maui Invitation. One of those awesome. I mean, right? What? Where did that rank on the thrills or the highlights of that gig for SU football and basketball, to just whether that's the Alaska Shootout, a bowl game? I mean, that had to be pretty cool then. Still would be.
Oh yeah, I mean, anytime you're attached to either a professional sports franchise or university, and obviously Syracuse being close to my heart as an alum, it was great to be their announcer and get to do a couple of NCAA tournament games, Sweet 16 one year, and then a bowl game my last year. I think it was that year that you're talking about, that Rutgers game. They played in the Insight Bowl in Phoenix, and little did I know that just a few months later I'd be moving to Phoenix. But yeah, that was, you know, that was so much fun, Mike, those 3 years being the voice of the team there at the Cuse.
Would that have been 2000 maybe, Mateen Cleaves, the Michigan State year, Syracuse? And
it was.
Okay, I was at that game.
Yeah. Yeah, and then, you know, 1 year I did the Bills preseason games. That was 2001. Greg Williams was the head coach. And he said to me, it was in a TV production meeting, he said to me, you and I are both going to be here a long time. The next year, I was in Arizona, and I think he might have been somewhere else at that point, too.
But soon enough.
We left for different reasons.
Yeah, soon enough. Well, I'm really happy to connect with you here, Dave. Of course, it's Arizona and the Bills in week one. How do you hear it? I mean, the Cardinals seem kind of like a little bit of a hype team. You've got Kyler Murray back healthy, and of course, Marvin Harrison Jr. goes a long way toward this. Is that how it feels to you, and is it warranted?
Well, you look at what they did, Mike, the last half of 2023 when Kyler Murray was healthy. They went 3-5 and really blew the last game. They should have been 4-4. Still, you had eight teams last year out of 32 that either went 8-9 or 9-8. The Cardinals just played all of them in the preseason. And I look at the Cardinals roster this year compared to the rosters of those teams last year, New Orleans, Indy, Denver, and I see a lot of similarities. There's a big difference, though, that stands out, and that's the quarterback. I think Derek Carr, of the three, certainly of the teams that they played, is the most reliable. We don't know yet about Bo Nix, and we don't know yet really about Anthony Richardson, but you know, Kyler Murray's been to a Pro Bowl. He's been to the playoffs. He proved last year he's healthy. It's year two in this offense, a full off season. He's really grown as a leader, really matured. So I think there's a chance, based on his ability, his talent level, that the Cardinals are among those surprise teams this year. And actually, I'd be surprised if they weren't one of those surprise teams this year.
Mm-hmm. You know, if I can go further with you here, Dave, on Murray and his reputation or his growth along those lines. I mean, it wasn't that long ago where there was a lot of discussion about him, the contract stuff and video games and all this, and who knew what to believe. I've always liked the player. I mean, I'm not alone in that, but it was kind of weird there for a minute. Has Murray changed? I believe that's kind of how you put it, since then, and just sort of was he misunderstood in those years? I just wonder about sort of his growth as you see it.
Well, he's definitely doing the right things in terms of the off-the-field leadership, stuff that maybe you kind of dismiss, you know, that people automatically just think, oh, that's nice. Like flying several of his teammates to Oklahoma City for a playoff game in the NBA playoffs. Because I happen to actually be doing that game and look down and I see Kyler down there with about five or six of his teammates. He took care of the tickets and flew them there. He flew about 20 guys to L.A., paid for a mansion for them all to stay at so they could all work out together. Again, it's, you know, little things like that that show leadership off the field. So, you know, and I see it on the field too. I mean, he's much more engaged than I think he was early in his career in terms of just talking to guys. You know, he's not alone in that, it takes time to kind of figure it out on how to be a pro. But he's doing all the right things. Now he still has to go out and win games and beat you from the pocket, but he's certainly capable of that. It's obvious that he's a great runner and people focus on that, but his accuracy and his ball placement, they're off the charts. They've always been. I mean, he is a very accurate passer, and I think his growth in learning the offense, his commitment, you know, I think him getting paid was just, he had money when he was young. I mean, he had a huge signing bonus when he was in college from the A's. So I don't know that money, I'm not saying it's not a big deal, but I don't think it changed him. If anything, it made him more hungry because, okay, now I've got this huge contract. I had to go prove it. I mean, he was so highly touted in high school. You know, I think he always knew there was going to be financial success. I really don't think that has had the impact. I think it's that he wants to prove people wrong and prove that he can go win a Super Bowl.
Dave Pasch is my guest here on WGR on the West Her Hotline. This is Mike Shope, and Bulldog is off today. You know, thinking about Murray as a dual threat, he's not unusual in this way, how as he sort of evolves in his career, ends up running less. I'm not sure, even by saying that, if I'm not mischaracterizing things a little bit, he had an injury, but that's 11 rushing touchdowns in 2020, the year the Cardinals beat the Bills on the Hail Murray, as it's remembered. We have Allen here, Dave, who ran for 18, including playoffs, last year. And it's an annual conversation, I think, probably in a lot of places. Baltimore, they're always talking about just to what extent should the Ravens, in that case, the Cardinals, the Bills, want their quarterback to run. You know, and it gets harder as these guys get older, too. But where do you think that stands right now with Murray? Do you expect to see maybe a return at all to what his rushing volume was? Or you say just before, you know, play from the pocket, is it something that they consciously want to sort of limit?
Well, I think if you look at him back in 2020, you know, some of it was called run, some of it was just scrambling. I think of a game against the Raiders, which I think was 21, might have been 22, but anyway, he basically won the game with his legs and just a crazy two-point conversion.
Yep.
It wasn't a called play. He just scrambled and made something happen. I think they're going to be judicious, just like I'm sure Buffalo is with Josh Allen. I mean, you've got to do what you think you need to do to win. And I'm sure it's considered when you think of a player's number of hits he's taken over the years and the fact you don't want to get him hurt. But at the same point, if that's a big weapon in your offense, you're not going to ignore that. So I think they'll be smart. There'll be called runs. There'll be times that he just scrambles. And, you know, they've got James Conner. They've got a good rushing game. But, you know, when he came back the last, you know, month of the season, they were the best run offense in the league. They were the best offense in the league. Statistically in yards per game that last month of the season. And, you know, a big part of that, again, is the threat. And if you're a defense, you have to worry about that. So you're always kept guessing whether it's a called run or a scramble. And, again, he's so, you know, because of his stature, he's hard to find. And because of his quickness, if you're late in locating him, you know, he might be out the gate and he's gone for a touchdown. So he obviously is incredibly dangerous, but my point earlier, Mike, about him as a passer, it's not that, you know, I think of him and I think of some of the other quarterbacks in the league that are considered run threats. You know, he's pretty remarkable as a passer. And again, that's information processing and accuracy.
Mm-hmm. I was listening to you call the end of that game against the Raiders. I was with my son and we were driving. And I remember this because it was A.J. Green who, like, you know, someday who's going to remember, if you will, but A.J. Green playing for Arizona, he catches the 2-point pass to force overtime in that game. And I just, like, that stuck with me because I'm playing all this fantasy football. Like, come on. A.J. Green is a thing. I mean, it didn't really last. But, yes, there were some amazing plays down the stretch in that game. Marvin Harrison Jr. So, to your knowledge, Dave, like, were the Cardinals, how close were the Cardinals ever to not making that selection? I mean, all of the talk with the quarterbacks, and there was some Malik Nabers discussion, you know, if who somebody's wide receiver one would be in this draft. Do you think, like, the Cardinals were always just zeroed in on him, or was it more of a process?
Well, it definitely was a process, but I think still early on he was the favorite, and then I think when it came down to making the decision, it's, you know, sometimes don't outthink yourself. All the things you're looking for, Marvin Harrison has those things. I mean, it's just watching the guy at practice or even watching, you know, he barely played in the preseason, played a few snaps in the first game, but just watching him warm up this past weekend, he's a pro, and his skill set is transitions easily. And that's not to take anything away from Nabers or Adunze, but I think Marvin Harrison Jr., you know, was the best receiver in the country the last two seasons, and his skill set fits the NFL. He's the type of person you're looking to bring into your program. So I think once they did their due diligence, went through all their numbers and met with all the players, they said, this is our guy. And why, you know, entertain trades or, you know, I'm sure they got phone calls, but at that point, if you got your guy, you take him. And I think it was just, you know, a matter of let's not overthink this. This is the guy. And so we're going to take him and move forward. And, you know, that's what they did. I think they had probably more, you know, chances to move later in the first round, but it worked out. Darius Robinson, we don't know yet if he's going to be available for that game against Buffalo, but, you know, when he was there at 27, that once was a no-brainer too. Like, again, don't overthink this. Let's not move. Let's take the guy because of where we have him and what we think of him as a person.
What do you think is, like, a reasonable – good outcome this year for Harrison? We've had some numbers wise, Dave, like, we've had some amazing rookie receiver seasons of late. I mean, Puka Nacua wasn't even a high pick, of course, last year, and he sort of broke records. That can't be, you know, the bar for anybody. But Harrison being so good, if the quarterback's right, do you see a big year? Is it right to expect, like, a pretty big year should happen?
I just based on the fact that you've got, you know, Trey McBride is one of the top receiving tight ends, so you've got a weapon there. James Conner is a very good receiver out of the backfield. So even though Marvin Harrison technically is your number one receiver, there are other options, which only helps him. And, you know, your health is a factor and all that. But I mean, if he plays most of the games, I would think he'd have a big year, just based on the fact that, you know, you look at matchups, even in the joint practices against Indy, when he's going up against really, really good players, and some of those guys have been around a long time, and he's dominating. I mean, the league is about matchups, and he's going to have a lot of favorable matchups. And so that's where you're going with the ball. It doesn't mean that that's always your first read, but, you know, he's going to be targeted a lot, I would expect.
Dave Pasch, my guest, you mentioned McBride. So in these fantasy drafts where I live, I mean, Harrison is late first round, whatever that is, wide receiver 7 or 8 pretty commonly. McBride can be tight end 1. You've got a few possibilities there with Kelsey and even Dalton Kincaid in Buffalo. McBride is an interesting lesson, I would say, Dave, just from the outside. Like, by the beginning of last season, I didn't hear anybody talking about him. Just wasn't enough there as a rookie to get people's attention. And then, you know, monster second half, just like some huge games. I watched the game in Pittsburgh last year, and he just seemed unstoppable in that game, McBride. How important is he here with Harrison and everything else with Connor? Do you think McBride is somebody that, you know, is a force, or does he sort of come back a little bit to the pack with Harrison there and other changes?
No, I would think with Harrison there and with Kyler Murray for a full season, he's only going to get better. And it's a great lesson in patience. I mean, you mentioned it. You know, sometimes guys get picked high and the expectation is for them to come in and dominate right away. And he needed some time. He's banged up a little bit his rookie year. And yeah, I think his confidence needed to get to a place where it got to the middle of last year, and you really started to see him take off. So I would expect him to continue to excel. I mean, he's really talented. I think he'll grow as a blocker. They're drafting a Tip Ryman out of Illinois, who is very different when you look at his skill set and his body type to Trey McBride. You know, if they play a lot of 12 personnel, if they play two tight ends, you've got two very different guys. So some of the things that maybe, you know, McBride would do last year, maybe he doesn't have to do. You've got Elijah Higgins, another weapon at tight end. I mean, they've got, and Drew Petzing, the offensive coordinator, is really smart, young guy, but really sharp. And I'm sure he will put Trey McBride in a position to succeed. And I think the great thing about, you know, week one is, you know, Buffalo, they're going to obviously sit there and watch preseason tape and try to figure out, okay, what kind of changes are there. But, you know, who knows how much of what the Cardinals showed is really what they're going to do week one. And you didn't see a lot of the players that you're going to see week one. You have tape to go on of last year, but again, the weapons are different. The offensive line's different. So the tape from last year helps in some respects, but you know, these coaches are so good. They're not going to just, they're going to make adjustments based on things that went wrong last year, but also on things that went well and tweak things here and there. And so you know, it reminds me of when the Cardinals played Tennessee. This was the year they went to the playoffs, and people were talking about Tennessee as, you know, this is the year for them to go to the Super Bowl. It seems similar to how people are talking about Buffalo nationally. And the Cardinals went in there and played a great game. And I'm not saying that that's going to be the same result. I'm just making the point that, you know, I think the Cardinals have a little bit of a, hey, we have something to prove, and this is a great way to start. You know, if you're building a culture and laying a foundation, going to Buffalo against a team that's been a perennial playoff team in the AFC for the last handful of years, what a great way to start. Let's embrace this like they did when they went to Nashville a few years ago.
Yeah, I like that too. I mean, it's an interesting matchup from both directions because while the Bills don't have the same things to prove, there's something. They're being doubted this year, I would think, more than for 4 or 5 years with Diggs leaving and some veterans. So I'm watching the point spread a lot, Dave, and 5.5 at home against a team that's missed the playoffs like the Cardinals. You know, it's sort of interesting. I'm not saying it's wrong, but it's interesting that it's not higher. You're seeing that respect for Arizona and those questions about the Bills, I think, manifest there. So, yes, totally, with what the matchup might be for Arizona. And I think here, I mean, the Bills, Dave, go at Miami, then it's Jacksonville, but at Baltimore, at Houston, at the Jets, their first 6 games, 4 road games, 4 night games. They best not let the opener sort of be taken for granted.
And I don't think that their coaching staff or their players will do that. They're too veteran. They've won too many games to somehow look past Arizona week one. You know, it's hard to overlook a team that first week of the season. You know, usually if that happens, it happens in the middle of the year, not when you've had a whole offseason to get ready for them. But, yeah, I mean, I've seen a lot of people say, Buffalo, this is the year. You know, Josh Allen has to prove that, you know, he's you know, elite quarterback, all that stuff. I mean, the things I've watched from Josh Allen, he's pretty darn good. The Bills are an excellent team, and I think they're going to surprise people too in this sense. I think Buffalo, I think they're right there. I think when you think of the three or four best teams in the AFC, I still feel like Buffalo is one of those teams, and I'm kind of surprised. You know, just because you have not beaten Patrick Mahomes does not mean that you failed in the playoffs. You've just been out-dueled by one of the greatest football players to ever play. So I still think Buffalo is right there among the best teams.
The Bills do have wins at Arrowhead Stadium each of the last three seasons, but as you can imagine, that rings pretty hollow with what's happened in the postseason. The game Allen played in Arizona that I mentioned earlier was one of those games in the...
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sort of nearer the beginning of his career, Dave, or like, okay, this guy's for real. I mean, the touchdown pass, I think, to Diggs before Arizona's last possession, he's rolling left, if you can see it, and just like one of these throws, like, oh my God, this guy is like legit. It took a lot of us a while to get there, but that game is one, even though the Bills lost, that I remember for this.
He's one of the best quarterbacks in football, and he's been one of the best. And you talk about leadership and how much his teammates love him, and you hear that all the time, just from talking to people around the league about how well-respected and how much that locker room thinks of him. And the job he did with Stephon Diggs is obviously not easy, and the job that Josh did to be his, you know, quarterback and be his friend. And, you know, there's a fine line there with how you play that as a leader and how you interact with those guys that are, you know, sometimes challenging and have been challenging for other teams. And I get that, you know, there's pressure there, and I understand some of the narrative that's coming out of there, but they still have a great roster and a great coaching staff. And I'm sure that there will be teams that were Super Bowl contenders last year that missed the playoffs, just like there always are. And there'll be teams that missed the playoffs that, you know, are a big factor this year. I mean, nobody saw Houston coming a year ago. So those things are going to happen. Yeah, schedule is a part of that, and Buffalo's got a tough schedule. But, I could see the opposite. I could see Buffalo winning a lot of those games, and all of a sudden that narrative changes pretty quickly.
Well, when I think about you, I just think about how much traveling you do with all the work for ESPN, college football, college basketball. We're here, right? Like, it's the beginning of the football season, and there's a transition. But, Dave, I just pretty much sit here in this room. I mean, that's it's easy enough to make that transition, but I'm guessing – here we go, right? I mean, are you going to even be on the road this weekend or coming to Buffalo? You're working pretty much every Saturday, every Sunday here for a while and more.
Oh, yeah. Yep. It's underway this week. We go to Alabama this week for Kalen DeBoer's first game. That'll be obviously a big scene there Saturday night. And then next week, I have Arkansas at Oklahoma State, which is kind of an interesting game. It's an early game on ABC, so there are no nonstops from Stillwater to Buffalo, although I really looked hard, but I can get in Saturday night. That's always a win if you can get there. I'm not sure how I'm going to get there, but my itinerary right now says that I land just short of midnight on Saturday.
Wow. I'd love to read a book about all these, you know, these travels, some of the small towns, or I got a small taste of it in 2000. I bet would be incredible, the stories. But I've already taken a lot of your time. Dave, thanks. Here we go. All your travels. Hope it goes well. And maybe we'll even see each other week one.
Yeah, good talking to you, Mike. Take care.
Thank you. Dave Pasch, voice of the Arizona Cardinals, college football and basketball for ESPN many years now. 803-0550. Want to talk about the upcoming season, the game against the Cardinals themselves. This show, as you may know, notoriously hates Arizona. Didn't get to mention that to Dave. And no, I didn't want to bother with it, but the year I worked at Syracuse was not a bowl game. That's like the number one thing I was excited about is that they'll always go to a bowl game. It's going to be Honolulu or Music City. And they won their sixth game. They became eligible, but they weren't picked. And then that was it. I missed my chance to go to a bowl game with Syracuse. Lines are open for your calls. Talking football here. Week one is just about here. Big day tomorrow with cuts. We'll have a lot of news that may even start to come around by today. 803-0550. This is Mike Shope on WGR.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio.
On WGR.
Unplanned appearance. I was just asked, do you want to talk to Sal? I'm like, sure. Did something happen? I worried at first that I must have missed some important Bills transaction, and instead I'm in here talking to Dave Pasch for 25 minutes, ignorantly blind to some massive move. But, well, I shouldn't assume still. Sal, did I miss something?
No, I wanted to talk to a celebrity. I just played golf with Roosevelt Bowie, who said, do you work with Mike Shope? He said, yes. He said, man, I miss Mike. We worked together a little bit. We used to do radio with him. And I said, man, that's great. And he talked very highly of you. And, of course, 6'11¾" right, without his shoes on, as you said, Roosevelt Bowie played right for Syracuse from Kendall, New York. But you reached out to me earlier today, wanted to know if I could go on. I'm actually here in the Olean for the Coaches versus Cancer a golf event and dinner, and really couldn't make it work. But I said, you know what, Mike, I have a little window here, so if you want to chat, we can do it.
Good. Yeah, you knew the reference, or he did, or both. Because one time when I sat with him on the air, and 7 feet, it's like, well, not really, but I never played a game barefoot. So I'll take it. He'll take it, 7 feet. Great guy. Well, I would like to know sort of your observations here, or expectations maybe better, off of Saturday into cutdown day. There were a few moves announced. The Chiefs just ran, I don't know, they had a list of 10 or 15 players, no big names. Do you think this from the Bills, or maybe you even know, will happen in waves, or are we going to get a list of like 30 guys tomorrow, just boom?
I would guess more along the lines of like a good group tomorrow, a big group, maybe the final group. Maybe there's going to be all but a few, but I think generally, if I remember correctly, once we get to Tuesday, now, they could change things up, but I think over the last few years, they might have that initial group, but then it's, you know, all at once after that. So my guess is you'll probably get something like that tomorrow at some point.
So who are a couple of the most interesting, you know, closest calls for you at this point? I know we've talked about Joe Andreessen and his, you know, his performances in the preseason, and, you know, some injury, an opportunity that sort of came open to him, and also Shavers at wide receiver. Are these, I know from looking at your grid that you're, at least when you did that, expecting them both to make it. Like, how confident would you be in these cases?
Yeah, I do. I think I'm fairly confident at this point, just based on how I've seen the team handle both, right? I mean, like, people have to remember, and I know you know this, Mike, but I have to remind people all the time, it's not necessarily what I would do. Not that I'd do anything different. It's what I project the team would do, based on how I've seen things play out, based on how they've used these particular players, what's happening injury-wise around the position. And with Bill Inspector's injury, with the way Joe Andreessen has played, the fact they've already released Deion Jones as one of their cuts, I do expect Joe Andreessen to make it. Now, they may feel he's just not quite there yet, and you know they don't have a spot for him, and I understand that. It also might depend on what they want to do with Matt Milano. Do they put Matt Milano on IR as one of the twos designated to return on cut down day to open up a 53-man spot, or do they have to carry him on the 53, then put him on IR because they don't want to eat up one of those designated returns because they're not sure if they will return this season? I think that's also playing a part of it. So I'm confident in him otherwise, but I think he should make the team based on everything I've seen. I think same thing with Tyrell Shavers. I think Tyrell Shavers has been on the team for quite a while now, and especially with the injury to Marquez Valdes-Scantling, maybe even though Sean said McDermott that he expects him to be ready for week one, when he's talking about him and Curtis Samuel, you know, I think you still have to make sure you're set there. And I really don't see anybody else pushing those guys, to be honest, Mike. I think this might be a case where who's really his competition, to be quite honest with you. Another close call for me, the biggest call that I had to make when I went through my 53 honestly, is Lael Collins. I just don't know if Lael Collins has a spot. I think he's like the 10th offensive lineman. Do they keep 10? But if they don't keep him, who's your backup guards? Because they don't really have extra backup guards. Alec Anderson is a backup guard. Tylon Grable's a tackle. Ryan Vandermark is a tackle. It just, I don't know how the numbers wash out there. He's a veteran. He has a lot of experience of playing both. He can play everywhere, basically, on the offensive line. I just think that's a really tough call right there.
You know, one of the, you alluded to it when we talked about Milano, maybe more challenging aspects of all this from the Bills tomorrow will be what to do with those IR designations. You've got a couple spots where the player can be designated to return, and then others maybe that would not be allowed. Maybe you could clarify that, and whether it's Milano or MVS or Trubisky even, are these players who it might be challenging for the Bills to know exactly how to play it?
It feels like and it sounds like MVS wouldn't be one of these guys. The way, you know, Sean talked about him and Curtis Samuel, that, you know, they would be able to kind of be ready for week one. So I don't think you're putting either – I don't think you're putting him on IR, because if you do, even if you place the designated to return tag on him, he has to miss four games. So anybody who goes on IR before cuts is out for the season, other than two people you could say, no, we're using these two guys as designated to return. So you can do that with MBS, but he'd miss 4 weeks. I think Baylen Specter would be a candidate there, but the one you brought up is really interesting, Mitch Trubisky. I think that's where you have to figure out, is Mitch Trubisky going to be, you know, available for week one? Now, I will tell you, there's a workaround here. What you do is, Mitch Trubisky just is on the 53-man roster, and you say, yeah, he might not be ready for week one, but he'll be fine for week three, let's say. Well, we don't, since you don't have to put him on IR for 4 weeks, you carry him on the roster, and then you just elevate whoever your third quarterback is to be the backup for those 2 weeks. Because remember, you get those two practice squad elevations every week. You can do that. So, yeah, it is a little tricky, but it's better than it ever has been with this, Mike, because traditionally this is the Reed Ferguson in the parking lot cut, as we like to refer to it, which is, hey, we got to get someone on the 53, and then we can put him on IR, so we're going to release you, Reed, and then after we get the person on IR, we can sign you again. You don't have to do that for two different players this year. This is a new rule. They can take two guys and automatically declare he is designated to return. Now, the other part of that, Mike, is you only get eight guys like that for the season. So if you do it with Matt Milano and he doesn't return, eventually you wasted a spot to do that with. So you have to really kind of know the guy is going to return at some point, or at least be confident he will.
And with Milano, would you be confident that he will? I mean, I guess we don't know everything about the extent of the injury, but how would you do that?
I don't know if I'd be confident. I think that it's still a lot up in the air, right, the way that people are talking about it. You know, I think when it was initially reported, it was, hey, looking at a possible December return, but you never know with these injuries. I think Matt, I'm confident in Matt to do everything he can to be ready. I think that, you know, he's the kind of guy that if there's any way that will do it and can do it, it'll be Matt Milano. So here's a good thing to think about, Mike. If the Bills do put Milano on IR before cuts and say he's designated to return, I think that shows they're pretty confident he's going to return.
Right.
If they carry him on the 53 and then put him on IR, I think that shows that they just kind of don't know and they're going to have to play it by ear.
Right. You know, not to do too much here on logistics, and a few minutes left with Sal Capaccio, there was another development today, I think, that was new in terms of quarterback three, the emergency quarterback, where the Players Association had something to do with, now you can't just have somebody specific, like a quarterback who you can elevate different than other positions because of an emergency. Is that right, and does that make sense?
So I saw the headline, Mike, and I did not read it because I was golfing.
Okay.
It did catch my attention, so maybe you would be able to tell me more, because I do know, I know that what you were able to do last year was you could have a third emergency, an emergency quarterback who is a guy that was on the inactive list on game day, but you could designate him even though he was inactive. He was your emergency quarterback, but he had to be still on your 53-man roster. Even though but he was inactive on game day, but if something were to happen, he could go into the game. So that's what they did there. Can you tell me, do you know off your hand what they changed that to that right now?
Only just to read Tom Pelissero, NFL teams were informed the PA vetoed the revised emergency third quarterback rule. So we're going back to the previous year, maybe, or how it used to be, which the so-called emergency quarterback has to be on the 53. Not somebody you can sort of stash. I'm reading right. One example of where this might get a little tricky is Case Keenum with Houston. C.J. Stroud, Davis Mills, and then maybe Keenum would have been somebody they could have done this with, but not now. And a team has a decision to make there, whether they want it, would rather have quarterback three versus someone else.
Okay, so I think there was a proposal that they were going to have even an expanded role for this, but that's not going to happen. So maybe it goes back to what it was last year where, you know, you could do that. But I'm going to look more into it. It's a good question. I did see the headline today. I didn't really, you know, read into it. I've talked to enough people in the league who just think, come on, what? Why don't we just have a third extra quarterback, because quarterbacks are so important, who doesn't count on the 53-man roster, but it's the only position you can do that with. I know a lot of teams believe they should be able to do that.
All right. Last thing, Sal, just quickly, I should have started here maybe, just an overview of the preseason. They got away, they got through it. I mean, there were injuries, but it could have been worse. They didn't always perform great, but you don't have to necessarily care about that. What else would you say about sort of what the takeaways from the preseason were?
Well, I think that this preseason was a bit kind of uneven for everything you wanted to see, because we didn't see Josh with, you know, maybe didn't show you and give you everything you wanted, I should say, because you wanted to see Josh with some of the new receivers. But, you know, obviously because of circumstance in Pittsburgh and the rainy and wet field and lack of warm-ups, he didn't play. And then this week, because of the injuries around the roster, they didn't want to play a lot of the starters. So I think we come out of this preseason maybe not getting everything that we had hoped, or maybe even the team had hoped. But I think a silver lining there is the team you're playing in week one didn't play any of their starters all preseason. I mean, Kyler Murray, James Conner, Marvin Harrison Jr., I don't think any of them took a snap in preseason. So you're going to get a team in the Buffalo Bills with a, you know, lack of reps, and a team in the Arizona Cardinals with no reps. You know, so I guess that's a good thing. But I thought just – I was hoping for more this preseason, at least to see a little bit of that. But I also understand you don't want to get anybody hurt. That's great. And then, you know, play-wise, they just did not play well against the Chicago Bears. I was very encouraged by the way the defense played against the Pittsburgh Steelers, but very incomplete with the offense just because of who we saw and who we didn't see on the field.
Very good. Enjoy the occasion tonight. Thanks for finding the time, and we'll talk tomorrow.
All right, you got it. Thank you.
Sal Capaccio on the Wester Hotline. His appearance is brought to you by New York's only outlet liquor. Your place to buy a case. What's your outlet? Look for a call next or two. We'll see how it goes. Ray Davis will join me in 20 minutes, Bills rookie running back. Bulldog is off. This is Mike Shope on WGR. Mike Shope here. Bulldog is off this week. Bills rookie running back Ray Davis coming up in less than 15 minutes. Here is Patrick first. Hi, Patrick.
Hi, Mike. So I have an entry into the ongoing vibes and feelings discussion.
All right.
I realized recently that my expectations about the Bills have sort of come full circle from where they were when McDermott started as coach. You know, in 2017, I was just thinking about make the playoffs and then we'll see. Then as the expectations were raised, they became more about the path. You know, first it was let's get the higher wild card spot so we can play a weaker division champion. Then it's let's win the division ourselves. Then it's, well, for me, it was let's get the Chiefs at home. I thought for sure that had to coincide with getting the number one seed, but of course it didn't. But when the Bills lost that game, even before all the personnel changes, that for me was the end of obsessing about the best road to the Super Bowl. I'm right back to where I was in 2017, which is let's make the playoffs and go from there. You know, for me, it's the combination of playoff fatigue, the conference being so strong, and also the schedule not exactly being conducive to the growing pains that most of us feel are coming. So in the game of would you take it, I would be okay with 10-7 and a guaranteed spot in the playoffs.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, Patrick. Thank you for sharing all that. That's mostly how I feel, too, and in terms of the sort of the cycle of it all. It's okay, though, right? Like, I think I would take that result, too. I think, as we've talked about a lot, some of that comes down to how you feel about the Jets and the Dolphins. And not everybody would be so optimistic for them. I mean, lousy teams win divisions in the NFL. The Bills have not been lousy in these four straight years, but that does happen, and you can sort of win by attrition. I doubt that's available this year. So I think the Jets are going to be really good. I think Miami's probably about the same, and that would make things tougher. But again, like, that's okay. Really, as the caller said, it's just about how you do then. And if you have to go to Houston or someplace in the playoffs and just know that you're only playing on the road, as relatively worried as I am for this season. I'm not super worried. I think what we're talking about here is about what I would predict for them. But it's relative and it's different than it's been the last few years. As relatively worried as I am, I think also, if I can get away with saying both things, that hypothetical Houston in the first round, or even someone not as exciting right now, some AFC South team, or even like the Bengals, somebody that, probably not the Bengals. The point is, I don't think you'd want to play the Bills in your first game. You know, maybe this team has real structural problems and they get scored on easily or something, and that's what attributes to that kind of a lesser season. But, man, that does not sound good to me. And what the Bills have had on the flip side of that is home field every year, and they've been lucky in terms of who they played in those first games. The Steelers last year, Skylar Thompson, like they've had it pretty good like that. This would not be that if you flip that and the Bills go to some whatever it is, whatever team it is. And like, if I were that team, if I'm new to the playoffs and I'm thinking about this is how I'm going to have to win three games to get to the top, just to get to the Super Bowl, and I got to play this guy first. Yeah, I wouldn't want that. So that's one way that makes sense to me that takes some of the edge off when thinking about this season and whether Aaron Rodgers is good again or anything like that. I'm looking forward to talking to Ray Davis, Bill's rookie running back. We'll do that right after the update. This is Mike Shope on WGR.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.